I may be a little late, but I shall surely come." Oh, if only he would! So kind, so good, so patient with me always, my dear old Fritz. I didn't value him half enough when I had him, and now how I should love to see him, for everyone seems going away from me, and I'm all alone. And holding the little paper fast, as if it were a promise yet to be fulfilled, Jo laid her head down on a comfortable rag bag and cried, as if in opposition to the rain pattering on the roof. Was it all self-pity, loneliness, or low spirits? Or was it the waking up of a sentiment which had bided its time as patiently as its inspirer? Who shall say? Chapter 43. Surprises. Jo was alone in the twilight, lying on the old sofa, looking at the fire and thinking. It was her favorite way of spending the hour of dusk. No one disturbed her, and she used to lie there on Beth's little red pillow, planning stories, dreaming dreams, or thinking tender thoughts of the sister who never seemed far away. Her face looked tired, grave, and rather sad, for tomorrow was her birthday, and she was thinking how fast the years went by, how old she was getting, and how little she seemed to have accomplished. Almost 25, and nothing to show for it. Jo was mistaken in that. There was a good deal to show, and by she saw and was grateful for it. An old maid, that's what I'm to be, a literary spinster with a pen for a spouse, a family of stories for children, and 20 years hence a morsel of fame, perhaps, when, like poor Johnson, I'm old and can't enjoy it, solitary and can't share it, independent and don't need it. Well, I needn't be a sour saint, nor a selfish sinner. And I dare say old maids are very comfortable when they get used to it, but... And there Jo sighed, as if the prospect was not inviting. It seldom is at first, and 30 seems the end of all things to 25. But it's not so bad as it looks, and one can get on quite happily if one has something in oneself to fall back upon. At 25, girls begin to talk about being old maids, but secretly resolve that they never will be. At 30, they say nothing about it, but quietly accept the fact, and, if sensible, console themselves by remembering that they have 20 more useful, happy years in which they may be learning to grow old gracefully. Don't laugh at the spinsters, dear girls, for often very tender, tragic romances are hidden away in the hearts that beat so quietly under the sober gowns. And many silent sacrifices of youth, health, ambition, love itself, make the faded faces beautiful in God's sight. Even the sad, sour sisters should be kindly dealt with, because they have missed the sweetest part of life, if for no other reason. And looking at them with compassion, not contempt, girls in their bloom should remember that they, too, may miss the blossom time, that rosy cheeks don't last forever, that silver threads will come in the bonny brown hair, and that by and by kindness and respect will be as sweet as love and admiration now. Gentlemen, which means boys, be courteous to the old maids, no matter how poor and plain and prim, for the only chivalry worth having is that which is the readiest to pay deference to the old. Protect the feeble, and serve womankind, regardless of rank, age, or color. Just recollect the good aunts who have not only lectured and fussed, but nursed and petted, too often without thanks. The scrapes they have helped you out of, the tips they have given you from their small store, the stitches the patient old fingers have set for you, the steps the willing old feet have taken, and gratefully pay the dear old ladies the little attentions that women love to receive as long as they live. The bright-eyed girls are quick to see such traits, and will like you all the better for them. And if death, almost the only power that can part mother and son, should rob you of yours, you will be sure to find a tender welcome and maternal cherishing from some Aunt Priscilla, who has kept the warmest corner of her lonely old heart for the best nevy in the world. Jo must have fallen asleep, as I dare say my reader has during this little homily, for suddenly Laurie's ghost seemed to stand before her, a substantial, lifelike ghost, leaning over her with the very look he used to wear when he felt a good deal and didn't like to show it. But like Jenny in the ballad, she could not think it he, and lay staring up at him in startled silence, till he stooped and kissed her. Then she knew him, and flew up, crying joyfully, "Oh, my Teddy! Oh, my Teddy! Dear Joe, you are glad to see me, then." "Glad? My blessed boy! Words can't express my gladness. Where's Amy?" "Your mother has got her down at Meg's. We stopped there, by the way, and there was no getting my wife out of their clutches."
"Your what?"
cried Joe, for Laurie uttered those two words with an unconscious pride and satisfaction which betrayed him. "Oh, the dickens, now I've done it." And he looked so guilty that Joe was down upon him like a flash.
"You've gone and got married!"
"Yes, please, but I never will again." And he went down upon his knees with a penitent clasping of hands and a face full of mischief, mirth, and triumph.
"Actually married?"
"Very much so, thank you."
"Mercy on us! What dreadful thing will you do next?"
And Joe fell into her seat with a gasp. "A characteristic but not exactly complimentary congratulation," returned Laurie, still in an abject attitude, but beaming with satisfaction.
"What can you expect when you take one's breath away, creeping in like a burglar and letting cats out of bags like that? Get up, you ridiculous boy, and tell me all about it."
"Not a word, unless you let me come in my old place and promise not to barricade." Joe laughed at that, as she had not done for many a long day, and patted the sofa invitingly, as she said in a cordial tone, "The old pillow is up, garret, and we don't need it now, so come and fess, Teddy." "How good it sounds to hear you say Teddy. No one ever calls me that but you." And Laurie sat down with an air of great content. "What does Amy call you?"
"My lord."
"That's like her. Well, you look it."
And Joe's eye plainly betrayed that she found her boy comelier than ever. The pillow was gone, but there was a barricade, nevertheless, a natural one, raised by time, absence, and change of heart. Both felt it, and for a minute looked at one another as if that invisible barrier cast a little shadow over them. It was gone directly, however, for Laurie said, with a vain attempt at dignity, "Don't I look like a married man and the head of a family?"
"Not a bit, and you never will. You've grown bigger and bonnier, but you are the same scapegrace as ever."
"Now, really, Joe, you ought to treat me with more respect," began Laurie, who enjoyed it all immensely.
"How can I, when the mere idea of you, married and settled, is so irresistibly funny that I can't keep sober?"
answered Joe, smiling all over her face, so infectiously that they had another laugh, and then settled down for a good talk, quite in the pleasant old fashion. "It's no use your going out in the cold to get Amy, for they're all coming up presently. I couldn't wait. I wanted to be the one to tell you the grand surprise, and have first skim, as we used to say when we squabbled about the cream."
"Of course you did, and spoiled your story by beginning at the wrong end. Now start right, and tell me how it all happened. I'm pining to know."
"Well, I did it to please Amy," began Laurie, with a twinkle that made Joe exclaim,
"Fib number one! Amy did it to please you. Go on, and tell the truth if you can, sir."
"Now she's beginning to marm it. Isn't it jolly to hear her?" said Laurie to the fire. And the fire glowed and sparkled as if it quite agreed.
"It's all the same, you know, she and I being one. We planned to come home with the Carrolls a month or more ago, but they suddenly changed their minds and decided to pass another winter in Paris. But Grandpa wanted to come home. He went to please me, and I couldn't let him go alone. Neither could I leave Amy. And Mrs. Carroll had got English notions about chaperones and such nonsense, and wouldn't let Amy come with us. So I just settled the difficulty by saying, 'Let's be married, and then we can do as we like.'"
"Of course you did. You always have things to suit you."
"Not always."
And something in Laurie's voice made Joe say hastily, "How did you ever get Aunt to agree?
It was hard work, but between us, we talked her over, for we had heaps of good reasons on our side. There wasn't time to write and ask leave, but you all liked it, had consented to it by and by, and it was only taking time by the fetlock, as my wife